Good morning. Today is Thursday, September the 17th. Joining us this morning from his locked enclosure inside of Marshall Elementary School, where the bad kids go, it's Fred Van Fleck. Good morning.
Thank you for the kind introduction. But yes, definitely alive and well and at work.
Hey, I got a question that's totally off the wall. Are there any of the Eureka City schools that have ghosts in them that you're aware of? Any reports or any of that kind of stuff?
Well, wouldn't the first question be, do I believe in ghosts?
Well, whether you do or not doesn't matter. It's just whether there are reports, that's all.
I have never heard, and I'm probably going to get a bunch of them now, but I have never heard of a report in any of our facilities, Eureka City Schools facilities.
Okay. There are not too many of them that are that old. You know, Eureka High, maybe, sort of. But there would have had to have been an event there.
Early 1900s, yeah.
Yeah, so, okay, never mind.
Back when it was a junior high and stuff, but yeah, nope.
Yeah, nothing out of the new ag building yet, so that's good.
Nope.
Okay. Winston, why do we say
it? Maybe in the wood shop, I probably shouldn't say this, but never mind. I'm not even going to say it. I'm going to stay out of trouble.
Good move.
Do you recognize that restraint that I had?
We'll talk about that in just a sec.
You know, come to think of it, I think there was a bit of a dark presence that I felt when I was a kid at Marshall. But I think maybe it was just one of the teachers I had. Let's go with... That's French, and I did not take French. How did a gullible person come to be called a sucker?
Uh-huh.
I wonder if it's related to a sucker punch at all, or if a sucker punch came after... I don't know.
I'm thinking sucked into something.
But
what would that be? A sucker punch. What would that be? Hog slop. How's that?
Wrong.
Okay. Well, I was trying to do something agriculture related for Fred. I could have said horse, but I couldn't say that on the air. So
try fish. A rather stupid fish is called a sucker because it sucks up its food.
Right.
It would just as complacently suck in live food, garbage, or a worm dangled in front of it on a hook. Likewise, a person who complacently swallows the bait is also called a sucker.
That works.
Interesting. I know there's some big sucker fish in some of our rivers.
Yeah, just the whole Eel River situation there is not pleasant. But you know what? As long as these fish can walk and pick it up and go find some water, I guess they're okay. So what the heck? a weird week, huh? We actually have blue sky this week. I don't know if you guys are ready for that, but it seems like we got it out there, huh?
It was amazing. On some of my virtual meetings, what day was that last week? Was it, Thursday or whatever day it was last week when it was so ominous? When I was conducting my virtual meetings, the windows behind my computer screen actually looked like they were tinted. In fact, I had multiple people around the area that commented, are your windows tinted or is that really smoke?
No, I'm just cool.
I said, no, my windows is clear as can be.
Yeah. Cool didn't even enter into the potential answer there, did it?
No, it didn't.
Yeah, okay.
No.
Yeah, we're blowing things up here left and right.
Yeah, we reached a hazardous level for a couple of time frames over the past week or so, and it is just so nice to get. That's one of the big advantages of living on the coast, and I feel horrible for the people that are in the fires, but, as far as the air quality, it's nice to have that coastal flow come in and blow some of that smoke out from the coastal area here, but, man, I just feel so badly for a lot of those folks that are out there just battling the fires and are evacuated right now. And, air quality seems to be such a small sacrifice compared to what they're all going through.
Yeah, certainly is a challenge for those folks, And on the flip side, we're also starting to see some really cool stuff. Ange and I were driving out after lunch yesterday, and a couple of the houses here on Marsh were being painted. Hadn't been painted in decades, at least. From my memory. We saw another house that was in the general neighborhood that had kind of lapsed into ugly, being totally renovated. You could tell it was going to be flipped. I mean, it's weird for us to be experiencing what the rest of the state has been experiencing for decades. This ability to invest and to do some stuff and to kind of have some cool things starting to percolate. Is that translating at all into the schools? Are you seeing a lot of transfers from out of the area coming in, either permanent or on a short-term basis?
We actually aren't. We really haven't seen much of that at all. And as a matter of fact, our enrollment is down, and we've seen a huge impact on our kinder enrollment. And I think a lot of our parents are opting to say, you're not doing in-person learning, so we're going to keep our kindergartner home for another year and have them in school a year later.
So it's not a homeschool, it's just no school or delayed school.
Yep. I think that's exactly what it is a delayed school. And so our enrollment, we're at the lowest enrollment that I'm aware of ever being at. And I think it's a combination of some families opting to go to some of the districts that have in-person learning and some families opting to just not enroll their children in kindergarten this year.
That's what Colby Smart was in on Monday instead of Chris, and he had indicated that, because I had asked him, what percent are doing the various options? And he said 10% are the in-person, 20% are a hybrid, maybe mornings on, and you split the class in half or whatever, and 70 are doing 100% of the virtual. But he did indicate that there was a lot of cross-district, not transfers necessarily, but taking advantage of that. So if you wanted your kid to be in the classroom, okay, you were going to those school districts, and if you didn't want them at all to be exposed anywhere to anybody, then you were going to the virtual, and that there were some inter-district transfers happening just because of parental concerns.
Right, absolutely. We definitely see that happening out there. And, our inter-district transfers aren't huge, but, it's in the tens. And part of the reason is the school districts that are doing in-person really aren't interested in taking on a bunch of children from the neighboring districts. It's just, some, if they have room in some of their classrooms, but they're not going to, overnight take 100 students from a different district.
Right, yeah, that would be, you'd have to anticipate that one somehow. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Fred Van Fleck, Eureka City Schools Superintendent. Fred, you had a board meeting this week. Anything exciting come out of that one?
We actually had two board meetings this week. We had one on Tuesday, and then we have one tonight. The one on Tuesday was a special meeting. The one tonight, Thursday night, is our normal regular board meeting. And the one we had on Tuesday night was all about the board providing direction on what they wanted our learning platform to be for the remainder of the year. And it was quite the board meeting. Our board meetings, as I'm sure most people know, are virtual because we are prohibited from holding any type of in-person board meeting because those gatherings are still not allowed. And in this virtual meeting, we had about 450 people tuned into it.
Really?
We did, yeah.
That's a nice, healthy number, isn't it?
It is. There's a lot of people that are very interested in what the decisions are going to be. And what just hit the news this week was one of the in-person schools that are having students in person actually had a student test positive for COVID. My understanding is so far they don't believe there's been any secondary transmission, but they are quarantining that class, and that class has had to dismiss for a while. But anyways, back to our board meeting, the board decided to continue with a distance learning model through January 22nd. A lot of conversation. I brought a recommendation to the board, and that recommendation was for our Windsor Children's Center, our TK through 6, to come to, in addition to our TK through 6, to come to in-person learning. There was a motion by a trustee to support that recommendation. It was seconded, and it failed in a 3-2 vote. And then there was another motion to bring back our TK through third grade students. And same thing, had a motion and a second. And then when it came to a vote, it failed on a 3-2 vote. And then there was a motion by a trustee to remain on the distance learning platform and have small groups of in-person intervention for struggling students, and also allow in-person instruction for classes that are equipment dependent. Think your ag shop classes, your auto shop classes, culinary arts, AutoCAD, where you need to have the specific computer program on the computer, those types of things. And that motion passed. So in the board meeting on Tuesday night, they did decide that Windsor Children's Center, which is our preschool program, would come back to face-to-face learning. But the remainder of the district would continue on distance learning through January 22nd.
What was the thought process behind that, Fred? Was it just keep the inertia? Were there pressures from special interest groups or from parents saying no, or yes, yes? Because what we're hearing an awful lot from the outside looking in is a lot of the parents now are being challenged with, okay, how do I keep money coming in? How do I keep the kid or kids attending whatever the school model might happen to be? Keep them on pace, still be involved? Because what I've been led to believe is there's a lot of neighborhood gatherings. You know, it's at Jane's house today, and it's at Bobby's house tomorrow, and Sammy is hosting the next day, and they're kind of doing the neighborhood thing, and everybody's just kind of doing their own thing, but they're doing it together.
So that's a great question. And so what we did to try to give our board as much information as possible to make the best informed decision as possible is we actually used our staff to phone our parents. And we did a personal phone call and asked a very specific question. And that question was, if we were to return to in-person learning, would you prefer to keep your child on distance learning or in-person learning? We're able to reach over 2,500 of our parents, which is, or I should say the parents of 2,500 of our students, because some of those students have the same parent. We're able to reach over 2,500.
You discovered that one this year, huh?
And the response was 54% said that they would like to be in in-person learning, and 46% said that they would like to continue distance learning. And so you talk about a decision that's difficult for a board to make with that kind of information. No matter what the decision you make, you have some people that are upset.
I was thinking the other way. You make a decision, and you got people who are applauding your decision.
You know. Exactly. And so what happened yesterday morning, there was a group of folks that were across from the district office over here who came out and did a peaceful exercising of their First Amendment rights. And I'm still looking at the sign across the street that they put on the transformer box that say kids deserve better, and it's not just about our senior year. There's probably somewhere in the neighborhood of about 40 folks over there, parents and students, just saying, let us go to school. And so there's a large group of people that want to go to school, and there's a large group of people that say, let us be on distance learning.
Okay. Well, that's certainly, there's a lot of choices that are out there for folks. Was there any consideration to the Zoom meeting presentation style in a classroom? So for those that wanted their kids to be there in the classroom setting, they would be accommodated. And those that wanted outside, well, they'd be able to watch in from outside, so to speak, with the video conferencing, but they could also then remain outside of the classroom setting.
there was a lot of conversation about a lot of different models. And at the end of the day, the decision of the board was to really err on the side of safety for students and staff. And they felt that it was in the best interest of our community to make sure that we flatten the curve to not open up Eureka City Schools at this time.
So what happens to the kids losing the year? Consider that.
Well,
consider that, and we'll be back. It's 8:30.
Hi, my name is Keith Lund. I am an electrician for Owsley Electric. You can go into a trade, be 18, become a trainee. They do require some education. You have 120 hours of classroom education, plus you have to work 2,000 hours a year. So after 4 years, then you can go out and work for another company, getting your own certificate, become your own boss. There's quite a few options you can do.
Own your future and learn more about the Trades Academy at hcoe.org.
Morning, KINS. News and information time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Eureka City Schools Superintendent Fred Van Fleck. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, Redeck, Humboldt Termite Pest Control, Murphy's Markets, and Baywood Golf and Country Club. Fred, before the break, we were talking a little bit about the concept of the kids losing a year of education. And I don't think that there's any question that the retrenchment is there. It's significant. We had it. It was called summer break. Okay, fine. That was part of the reason why, some of the other holidays are scheduled in certain ways these days. Okay, get it. Now we've got a year and a half. Is it going to be simpler just to say, okay, everybody roll back a year and whatever the year is you're supposed to be in at the end of this academic year, you're going to start it at that level next year? In class, get it going, and hopefully semi-normal returns.
Well, here's the crazy thing. Today is September 17th, and September 17th marks the end of a six-month period that our students have been in without in-person instruction. We went out originally on March 17th. There is a few kids that are in-person. Some of our students with disabilities we have on our campuses and doing in-person learning. Wow, that is a long time to not have that interaction with other people face-to-face. And to get really to your question there, are our kids going to lose a year of instruction? And I'm going to answer that no, but I'm going to give a qualifier to that answer. And the qualifier is there is no substitute for in-person learning. There absolutely is not. However, we have learned a lot from what we did as far as distance learning last spring. And we have made a tremendous investment of thousands of hours of man and women hours in the preparation for our distance learning. And we had 5 days of professional development at the beginning of this year that was solely, with all of our teachers there, that was solely designed to set us up for distance learning. But the one thing you have to continue to consider is it's like all of our teachers are first-year teachers this year because none of them have ever delivered a complete distance learning platform. And so they're in a learning model. But what we are delivering right now is miles better than what we were delivering last spring. And so to answer your question directly, are children losing a year's worth of instruction? No, they're not. Are children getting the same level of instruction that they would have gotten in person? No, they're not. But we are going to work incredibly diligently to make sure that we are making the best that we can out of the distance learning platform. Right now, our students are engaged in what's called synchronous learning for 4 hours a day. Our kinder through third are just a little bit less than that, but our fourth grade on up, they are engaged with a teacher for 4 hours a day. They could be doing some independent work while the teacher's on and the teacher's engaging and interacting with them, but there's a live teacher on with them for those 4 hours and providing that instruction and making sure that we're moving forward. And that's one of the things that was a disadvantage of coming back to face-to-face instruction, because if we went to a hybrid model, especially at, say, Eureka High School, we'd have to have an AB group. And so the students would, instead of getting instruction every day, they'd have instruction every other day, and so they'd be moving out on instructional time, and that's one of the decisions that has to be made. What's better, 4 hours of interaction and learning every day, or learning every other day, and on the off days when they're not in person, doing the homework from the on days? You know, and that's a tough call.
Well, I would think, you know, and again, it's a, I would suggest it's probably going to be a parental decision rather than a school board or staff or faculty determination. But I, as a parent, I would say, you know, give me a half day, but make it consistent. There's every, you know, these pumpkin schedules, you know what a pumpkin smile looks like, right? Up, down, up, down, up,
yep.
Down. Yeah. Pumpkin schedules just create havoc. Because there's no consistency. There's no consistency for the kid, no consistency for the parent, no consistency for the employer, for the employee, for the neighborhood. There's nothing. So why would you go in with a model that wasn't consistent? You know, if it's afternoons, make it afternoons. If it's morning, make it morning. Whatever it is, consistency.
And that was actually the schedule that was part of my recommendation to the board for the PK through 6 was to have an AM-PM model. And so all students would go to school. So we take our classes, divide them in half, and half the students would go to school in the morning, half the students would go to school in the afternoon. So we're able to provide the social distancing, the smaller class size, and students would have the consistency of going to school every day. So we really did keep that in mind, although it's different when you get to the high school level because you have 6 periods,
right,
as opposed to a single class. And so you can't quite do that same AM-PM schedule. Fortuna's gotten pretty creative in their schedule, where they're taking 2 periods, I believe, and doing a 6-week time frame for those 2 periods, and then they're going to do a different 2 periods for the next 6 weeks. And so there's creative things out there that can happen, but where we're at right now is fully vesting ourselves in the distance platform.
So is that, you said it's through this scholastic year, thoughts of, let's say there's a rebound on this thing. Does this have the legs to become a more formalized model or a delivery system for education into the future?
I hope not. I hope not. Again, it's no substitute for in-person learning. I want to get our children, now this is just me speaking, as a superintendent, but not speaking for the board, our kids need to come back ASAP because we need our children to be in-person learning as soon as it's safe. And the sooner we can get some sort of a vaccination for COVID that's safe and get kids back in school, the better, because we won't be able to substitute this distance learning. I think that the distance workplace, it's going to grab hold and it's going to be here for a while. I just don't think that the distance schooling is going to be, because there's so much social, emotional maturity that needs to happen through these face-to-face interactions that can't happen in the distance model.
Well, so if that's the case, then why? Well, let me step back. There really isn't, I mean, you have to have a requirement then for every person who's on the campus facility at any time to have proof of vaccination in order to make that happen? Or, I mean, right now you kind of sort of have to for the kids to register at the front end, but they never talk to folks about having booster shots or anything like that. Or if somebody shows up with a cold or a virus, most times they're not told to go home. Does that change?
Well, it certainly does change for face-to-face instruction right now, because if somebody came with a sniffly nose or a sore throat or anything like that, they'd be asked to go home immediately, whether it was COVID or something else that had the symptoms of that. I've been asked also, are we going to require, if we were to come back to the face-to-face school, are we going to require students to have a flu shot? Well, short of some sort of law being passed by our state legislators, that's not going to be a requirement. And so what we're going to be waiting to see is, once the vaccine becomes widely available, is there going to be some sort of law that's passed by our state legislators that said students, in order to enroll in school, have to have a vaccine for COVID? And if I was a betting man, I'd bet that law goes through.
KINS News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning. We're back talking shop this morning with Fred Van Fleck. Last couple minutes of the show. Fred, you were sharing during the break that there's movement at Jacobs. Actually, there's movement to the dump from Jacobs. How cool is this?
I was going to say, there's been mice and rat movement in that facility for years.
Well, it's one of those places that you want to go and hang out because you can get outside of the building. What do you see when you get there?
Well, here's the reality. Jacobs closed down, I believe, it was in the 80s. And then it was used, it was built in the early 60s, closed down in the 80s. And so that's amazing in today's time frame. Build a junior high school, use it for 20 years, and then close it down. Then it was used for a myriad of other things over the years, such as adult education, continuation high school. And then it was ultimately completely shuttered in 2007, I believe. And so for the past 13 years, it sat there as a deteriorating vacant building. And the good news is we did a little bit of the abatement work a couple years ago. And then started on Monday of this week, we have a firm out there who is a successful bidder who is doing the remainder of the abatement work and the demolition of the majority of the campus. And so that'll be happening over the next several months. And so those of you that are interested can start driving by there and checking out how that progress is going. Progress will look slow in the beginning because they're getting the lead and asbestos, primarily asbestos type stuff out. And then once that asbestos is out, they'll start bringing down the buildings and hauling those away. And so, like I say, that'll happen over the next couple months. All that will be left, I would say probably 5 months from now, is just going to be the concrete foundations of some of those buildings that are over there.
Do you have a wood fence out there so we can stick our nose through the knothole?
There's even better cyclone fencing around it, where you can stick your nose through each one of those individual chain links.
All right. Well, you'll see me out there tonight. Thanks, bud.
Thank you.
Keep smiling.
Good talking to you.
See everybody tomorrow.
All right.